a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G,
yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah. On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Happy Monday. Welcome to Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe, Paul, and Sean. And you are welcome into the show at 713-780-3776. What a weekend. March Madness was awesome. No buzzer beaters, but it was pretty good.
Texas-Tennessee ruined it all for me. That's the worst game I've ever seen in my life.
No, it was better than the Virginia game.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So I mean, here's the list of all the crap games that were out there. There were some fun moments in college basketball, but after the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, Joe, I feel very good saying, yeah, I don't need to watch college basketball every single game of the season unless it's the Cougs.
100%. Do not need to. That game was wild, and we'll get into it. But the Rockets, Paul, Rockets just keep winning. That's all they do is win. Win basketball games. Jalen Green's shooting like 40% from three in this stretch. They're rolling right now, and they don't stop. It's incredible.
Back to 500. The Warriors lost again, so they're closer to potentially getting that 10th and final play-in tournament spot. And to what you said about Jalen Green, he's going to win Western Conference Player of the Week again, you would think. I mean, look what he's done over the last couple of games. He's averaging 36 points a game since being Western Conference Player of the Week. He's 18 for his last 36 from outside, and he had 41 points. 41 points on 7 of 11 from outside against the Utah Jazz on Saturday. And again, you can put an asterisk by the Jazz, who didn't have Lauri Markkanen, but it is really amazing that this stretch continues. You hope it keeps on keeping on. Is there a wall that's coming? There's a part of me that feels like, I mean, there's bound to be, but all of a sudden the Houston Rockets are watchable again, which is nice because there was a little stretch of this year where things were getting pretty ugly out there.
Mm-hmm. And they're playing collectively well, just as a whole. The Rockets, Fred VanVleet's playing great. He had, 10 threes, just 10 of 15. They just collectively have really turned a corner in a way that seems kind of shocking when you think about who's missing from this team. You don't have Şengün. You don't have Tari Eason. You don't have Cam Whitmore. And they just keep playing better and better and better throughout this stretch. And yeah, I hear you. Like, they're not playing the best competition. But at some point, if Jalen Green just keeps balling like this, then it's what he is right now. And I don't really care who they're playing because he's doing it every single night. He's having a good performance.
For the last month, though.
Yes, for the last month. It is a short sample size.
He is the streakiest of streaky players in the NBA. The difference is he just also happens to have 99th percentile athleticism.
Yes.
And that changes things a little bit. I was very surprised to hear the Bill Simmons podcast, late Sunday posting, lead off with the Houston Rockets.
I was listening to it on my way in.
And there were no Boston Celtic references during that entire period that they discussed the Houston Rockets.
Well, except there was the only one they mentioned was the one that we discussed that Sean brought up last week on the show. That when you look back to what the Celtics did when they really turned it around in Adoka's first year versus when the Rockets did, like, it's very on pace.
I was trying to give Bill a pat on the back for not mentioning the Celtics for the first time ever. But
now
you're right. It's a little different because Adoka, of course, used to coach the Celtics.
That's why he gets a pass on this one. Yeah. He gets a pass on this one moment. But it was surprising to listen to their podcast because I saw Rockets in the description. I was like, okay, let's see what they have to say. You know, sometimes they're not the biggest fan. Sometimes you'd even call
deservedly them. So. That they have not been. I mean, for me, I have not enjoyed watching them until this year. And I go, oh, they're James Harden. Oh, they were a game away from the NBA Finals. Yeah, I like that they won, but I didn't like watching them play.
Yeah, the style of basketball was not enjoyable.
It's unmanly.
Yeah, but the way they play now.
Yeah.
And talk about being manly.
Oh, my God. They're getting in fights every game. Jabari Smith got suspended.
Which is a garbage-ass suspension.
It really was because he did not strike first.
No.
He struck second.
If you get punched in the face, You should be allowed to punch back.
Especially if the person grabs your neck and then swings at you.
Yeah.
Because there were two strikes, so Jabari should get his one. It's not even like anyone connected either, which is always the most disappointing thing about NBA fights.
Disappointing.
I wonder how much of it is just say like, hey, Rockets, chill out. Like, we can't be having to review your tape of what happened in every Rockets game, all right? Like, it's been a rough and tumble last, like, 3 weeks of Rockets basketball.
Yeah.
Just, hey, sit one down.
Shut up, Jock Landale. Yeah, come on. Like, what are you doing?
We're seeing Dylan Brooks every night. We're seeing Amen Thompson. We're seeing Jalen Green against the Suns.
This is good.
No, I'm saying if you're the league, they're like, all right, guys, settle down a little bit.
Yeah, Sean is saying the league is soft.
Gotcha. We can't have every night one team is fighting someone.
Well, the Rockets are on television every time they play because there's a fight. Like somewhere Scott Van Pelt, every night it feels like, is showing a scrap in the Rockets game.
It's like, hey, look who's getting tangled up.
And then at least it's a different player every night, too. It's not like it's just Dylan Brooks.
They're spreading the love.
It's Cam Whitmore. It's Amen Thompson. It's Jalen Green. It's Jabari. It's team fights.
Yeah. From top of the roster to the bottom of the roster, no one
squabble
is above a good squad.
We need Boban to get in the mix. That's what we need.
I don't
people's heads like coconuts.
I don't want him to get in the mix. I feel like he'll kill someone.
Hey, Jabari's suspended for a game. They need some big
he's,
man.
He's
minutes.
Got an opportunity.
They need some big man.
How about Jock Landale? It's his night tonight against the Portland Trailblazers.
That sounds good.
Okay.
He's Australian, and I mean him telling Dylan Brooks the other night, like, "Hey, Dylan, we can't have you getting ejected. Shut up, Jock.
Who's sleeping on the air mattress? Who was that from the
DeAndre
Portland?
Ayton.
DeAndre Ayton. That's who Jock Landale should fight tonight.
Yeah,
that's your target.
I forgot. Mark, he's in Portland.
Yeah,
God,
yeah,
he's Portland in Portland. Stinks. Yeah. So
now, Paul, you're going to the game tonight.
I am going. Yeah.
What do
they've
you...
earned my attention?
They have.
I was going to stop side.
No. But I will go down on. I mean, I'm going to go on the court before and you know take some videos and post it to the gram to make it seem like I'm someone worth having. You know, make it seem like I am a VIP. Then I'll go back to the press area and not say a word for 2.5 hours. Which is how it normally goes. But listen, I'm going to the game because they have earned the respect of Mr. Bandwagon. Mr. Bandwagon, he's looking to put his seal of approval on the Houston Rockets. And if the Rockets can go back above 500, I will be there to put the stamp there to say that I'm officially on the Rockets bandwagon until the end of the season when it's Boston Celtics time. And then I'm back in the Celtics bandwagon.
But the Rockets might be in the playoffs.
They
For at least one day, you might have to be in the playing game.
They might be in the play-in.
Okay, so it's not the playoffs?
It's not the playoffs.
Sean and I made a big mistake this weekend.
What'd you do?
Well, because listening to the Bill Simmons podcast, I learned that at one point this weekend, on Saturday, the Rockets were plus 800 to make the play-in game. We should have jumped on that
one. You guys are such amateur gamblers.
Yeah, well, Sean told me my bet on the Rockets this weekend was bad.
That is true. Mr. Rockets.
Well, no, wait. But it hit, right?
It hit easily because I took the over and they scored, 90 points in the first half?
They scored 48 in the first quarter.
I was like, okay, we're feeling good here.
Yeah, and after watching, 15 hours of college basketball every day this weekend, 48 points in 12 minutes, you're like, oh, my God.
Now, the Jazz had scored at one point 20 points in the first quarter when the Rockets had scored 40, so I was a little nervous. But the Rockets just... All they're giving right now is reasons to be thankful, Paul.
I wish I'd watched the Rockets on Saturday night. I watched that Texas-Tennessee abomination. The Lord.
So did I.
The Lord. I mean, I'm sorry for your loss, Sean, but I think we all lost watching that one.
Dude. That's
the worst basketball game I've ever seen.
I feel like every, third March Madness game, there is just, a seven-minute scoring drought.
It's terrible.
It's, insane.
I mean, even in last night's Cougs-Aggies game, there was a stretch where it was bad, but the final score, I mean, they still got close to 100 because it made to overtime.
They went to overtime, and Texas A&M started fouling, with 3 minutes left, sending the Cougs to the line, which is a move I super enjoy.
They brought in Elvin. Our guy.
Oh, yeah, they're just running out of bodies.
he hit one of his two free throws. The great white hope.
When he walked on the court, I was like, oh, he's going to get the ball here. He's absolutely getting the ball in this moment.
Of course.
Dell and I were talking about how many guys had to foul out before Ryan Elvin on the bench was like, oh my God, I might play. Which is, by the way, his reaction would be was, oh my God, I might have to play.
Yeah.
The funniest part was all of his teammates were basically like patting him on the shoulder, encouraging him before he even took the first free throw. And then they would shoot over to a shot of the Cougs on the bench. And the Cougs are all like, oh Jesus, this is not good.
Yeah, you have your token walk on, all of a sudden he's on court.
Yeah, the last time The last time he took a shot in a game, like with the game still in doubt, was probably in high school. Like, what?
Yeah, that was great. That's an all-time March Madness moment. I need the Cougs to win the national championship game this year, just so Ryan Elvin can be part of one shining moment. Because, you got to put him out there. Just
did he slap the court? Of the,
I don't think
he played defense.
Yeah, I think he shot his free throws and they took him off the court like right away. So it was it was not made for him to slap the floor in this game.
I mean, when they play Duke on Friday, more than anything, I want Ryan Elvin to get some buckets against Duke. It's like, you could have had me, Duke.
You're gonna need a lot more foul outs.
Yeah. I really hope we don't see Ryan Elvin play ever again.
I mean,
unless maybe, they're smoking Duke.
They see him with 3 minutes left in the second half while the Cougs are up 35.
With the way they called that game, I mean, you gotta wonder if the NCAA even wants to see the Cougs win.
I mean, I feel like they got bought off. The refs.
There were a lot of fouls.
There was a highly religious man in the crowd that I wonder if he was just praying for fouls for A&M.
Ted Cruz? No, I'm kidding. Jack Easterby. The Cougs had Ted Cruz, the correct man on the bandwagon, not Jack Easterby. Huzzah!
That Jack Easterby thing came out of nowhere.
It did. A&M immediately, Buzz Williams feels the need at a press conference to say, oh, wait, no, this isn't a big deal. But one of his players directly contradicted him. Jack Easterby, he has weaseled his way in. Hey, Culties, I know you're listening out there. You guys better be strong, okay? This is like an FBI informant infiltrating your cult. This guy will go all the way to the top if you do not remove him immediately. He is bad, okay? And you know, as well as I do, that culty school, a man like Jack Easterby, he could turn that thing into a borderline military power. You know it. That man, he sees just an inch to grab for power. He will take it. Guys, you have this paramilitary thing going on there, okay? I do not want some random militia coming out of College Station and Bryan trying to take over all of Texas. Jack Easterby will do that. Get him out. Get him out.
Thank God they already hired an AD.
Okay.
Imagine him in the building with an open AD spot.
Oh my God. Seriously.
Wait, time out. How do we know he didn't help pick the athletic director?
That's a good point.
I'm literally trying to get a Wikipedia on Trev Albers to figure out if there's... But he doesn't have... Oh, here's this Wikipedia. I need to figure out if there's a connection to Jack Easterby now.
I know the Aggies get mad when I do this, but like, guys, I'm legitimately concerned for you. This is not me making fun. This is me legitimately being concerned. He is a part of this, okay? He finds an effing way. He is like life in Jurassic Park. Life finds a way. No, Jack Easterby finds a way. Jack Easterby finds a way to the power.
I can't believe that Jack Easterby is back in the lives of Aggies fans who are also Texans fans. For those of you, I apologize.
I'm so sorry. What a game for him to, like, I guess, not make his debut, because I think he was around the first round matchup against Nebraska, but for him to, like, really be in the spotlight, and it's literally Texas A&M versus Houston. Like, the most amount of people in America who know his name. You could not put two teams together where every member of the fan base is like, hey, I know that guy.
Here's the thing. If they had won that game, I mean, it would have been disastrous for our beloved Cougs. But, I mean, if they won that game, don't even try to tell yourself that Jack Easterby is not going directly up one rung on the totem pole.
Defensive coordinator for the football team.
Watch out, Buzz Williams. Coming soon to you on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, the Jack Easterby Show, Monday nights at 7 o'clock.
I mean, we are the home of the Aggies. Like, we're not that far away from it, man.
Now, Now all I know is that I hope that at some point Jack Easterby is interviewed on a Texas A&M coaches show in the next 365 days.
Oh, or just swing by a Texags and do an interview with Nuno.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love to be able to call Nuno and be like, so what's Jack like? That would be incredible. All right, it's ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Paul has a spicy Rockets take. He kind of hinted to, but we'll deep dive into that next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
First, let me tell you about my friends at mybookie.ag. Promo code BET975. I told you to take the Cougs to go all the way. I told you to take the Cougs to cover against Longwood. Holy crap. I mean, really covered against Longwood. Sorry, guys. Wrong place, wrong time. But if you want to keep on betting on all of the madness, I mean, don't you want to bet on the big game that's coming up on Friday night? The Cougs get a chance to prove to the world that Duke is a bunch of frauds. Cougs are 4-point favorites with that 8:39 tip off on a Friday. What the hell? What the hell, NCAA, by the way? Can we make it a little bit earlier in the day? I know I'm getting up there in age. MyBookie.ag, promo code BET975. You can get a deposit match of up to $1,000 if you enter in that promo code, and you can play with it immediately. Hammer the Cougs. Hammer them. MyBookie.ag, promo code BET975. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only with MyBookie.ag.
It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
So, Paul, this is the first time that you've enjoyed watching the Rockets ever?
Yeah. I like the 2011 and 2012 teams. I liked the Rocket era teams of, like, finally moving on from Luis Scola and then early 2012 before I understood what James Harden was. Like, the first year of James Harden, I didn't hate it. It's mainly because of the emergence of Patrick Beverley. But, Joe, the teams that I want to root for, I want them to win, but if they're not going to win the title every single year, I would like them to win in a way that makes me feel proud of them as somebody who lives in the same city as them. And that means being tough over being, I would say, like, showtime, showy, flashy. And this Rockets team, with yet another squab happening in the midst of the game, Jabari Smith Jr. getting suspended, there is a scrap to them that I enjoy significantly more than watching James Harden dishonor all Americans with his flopping BS and his theatrics to try and draw foul calls. Honestly, the best part of the last month since the All-Star break ended and the NBA put some rule changes in is that all of a sudden James Harden's not working anymore. You hate to see it. I love watching this version of Rockets basketball a lot more. Yes, even though the Rockets were a game away from making it to the finals, where they probably would have won the finals back in 2018 against the Warriors.
Yeah, 2018 is probably the last time I really, really enjoyed watching the Rockets on a night-in and night-out basis until this stretch. Because 2019 was good, but not as enjoyable as 18. I did enjoy the Russell Westbrook era, like right before the bubble. So like that January 2020, really when the Rockets started to figure it out, there was a short stretch there where it felt like everything with Russ and James was starting to come together. Russell Westbrook stopped just bricking threes constantly. I liked that moment, but I'm with you. This is the most I've enjoyed Rockets basketball. And then it's just because I, like you, did not really enjoy James Harden. And part of that's probably the ties to the city and like the passion of the fan base at times that we each have. I could never get behind just dribble, 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 shoot a bad shot.
Or flop or flail your legs out violently to try to get a foul and not play any defense. I mean, this is perhaps stereotyping in the realm of sports, but I always feel like flashy and soft go hand in hand. Maybe the Warriors are the exception because they've got Draymond Green running around kicking people in the nads, but
Okay, he's like he's still soft.
Draymond?
Yeah. Draymond is fake tough guy.
I don't know. I mean, Draymond is actually bullying people out there and punching them. Now, no one punches back because I think they know that they're going to get in trouble if they do.
Yeah, I'm not. Draymond always screamed, like he was
he is about that life though. I mean, no one punches back. Someone should punch back.
Now, Draymond knows that he can toe the line and he's not going to get response. Now we'll see if that happens on April 4th. If he tries to squabble with Jabari Smith
Jr. He says he doesn't pay the Rockets even a second of attention. Bulletin board material.
Is there... He's probably still like, what? Don't they stink? Isn't Steven Silas still their coach? I forgot about
him. But he's
new
media. He's a podcaster. I thought he was on top of the game.
I wish my bookie had headlines for will there be... over-under amount of technicals in Rockets-Warriors on April 4th.
I think you guys said it, 2.5.
I'm going to say 1.5.
1.5's the line?
I bet that Dylan Brooks and Draymond will have something happen, though, and that is pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So my thought behind 2.5 was Draymond or Dylan are good for one themselves.
One each, and then another
one. And then one of them will get another one.
Yeah, or Udoka will get one. Yeah.
So there's professional slapping competitions.
Okay, that stuff is wild.
It is wild. What if there was a professional sacking competition between Dylan Brooks and Draymond Green? Last man standing. Like, they just get to go, bow, right in the baby makers. And then the other guy, after he gets up, probably convulsing, to have children again, pow, back in the other baby makers, and they go back and forth.
Put 60 seconds
wins,
on the clock.
Toughest man in the NBA.
Yeah, put the sex after you get hit, 60 seconds on the clock for you to get up.
Yeah.
to compose yourself. That has to be a thing in, like, I don't know. That feels like a very, like, Wales or, like, Scotland thing of, like, we just punch each other in the nuts, see who gets up.
Pound for pound, Brooks and Draymond Green have got to be two of the best nut punchers in the entire world.
And Chris Paul. That's probably your top three.
Oh, yeah, Chris Paul.
That's probably your
Chris
top
Paul
three.
Chris Paul is a body of work.
Honestly, Chris Paul is number one.
Unimpeachable body of work. He's been doing it since Wake Forest.
Exactly. Yeah, Draymond's more of a kicker.
We'll see. Draymond's, though, a lot like
Chris
in
will just get
MMA,
the tap on the way.
But see, you hate on Draymond because of his kicking. Draymond's the MMA guy, where Dylan's more of the boxer.
Mm. It's different
so,
style.
Two different styles, right? So, I mean... There's a reason that Draymond's won all those championships. And no, I'm not talking about being on the same team as Steph Curry. I'm talking about because teams are scared that they're going to get sacked. So they're always like a little on edge. But in this Rockets-Warriors game, not too long away. What is it, 9, 10 days or so?
Yep, something like
April
that.
April 4th.
Whatever April 4th day is away.
I always get screwed up. The 31st of March messes with my math.
It does. So, Sean, you are like the real resident Rockets fan here. Do you think it's a fair take that this is the most we've enjoyed Rockets basketball since, for me, 2018, for Paul, 2012?
Since Kevin Martin was on the team?
Since Kevin Martin was off the team.
You're the only person
off
that's like, man, Kevin Martin.
I was like, let's go.
Off the team.
He went way farther back.
Kevin Martin got traded for James Harden.
Yeah, I know.
So that's
what I mean. So when Martin was off the team, like, I liked
You liked the first James Harden year.
I liked 2011, the first year, where Chandler Parsons comes out of nowhere, is randomly good, and then where Kyle Lowry was being a little baby and wasn't playing, and Kevin Martin was doing the same thing. Goran Dragic comes out of nowhere and randomly becomes my favorite rando European basketball player. I really enjoyed that 11 team. And the 12 team I like too because, they brought in Landon Oshik and Harden was in there at first. But Patrick Beverley emerged over the course of that year and I really like Patrick Beverley.
I think it is natural for a lot of people to like the kind of the come up teams more than the actual, especially when you're not like when you're the Wile E. Coyote of the NBA and the Warriors are the roadrunner. Like you enjoy, I mean, like
no
you
expectations.
You enjoy the 8-seed Rockets in 2013 more than you like the 2018 Rockets, like the best regular season Rockets team of all time. Like I think it's a natural thing to like, oh wow, we're seeing the signs of Sengun and Green coming together and all this stuff. Amin Thompson more than you know. If we fast forward in 4 years and they lose in the Western Conference Finals, is like the farthest they get. Like that is a natural thing to have.
The resume was out with Harden in 18, though. I knew what Harden was. And 18 was not Harden's fault. I mean, Paul got hurt. It was bad luck more than it was anything that the Rockets did in that series other than missing 27 threes in a row. But let's not talk about
it. I mean,
that.
Even with the 27 threes in a row, they lost by 9.
Yeah.
Like, it was a very close game.
It was still pretty close.
They would kill March Madness.
I just want the teams that I root for to be tough, and specifically the ones that are in the same city as me. And, I mean, that's what I loved about the Patriots growing up. That's what I loved about the Ubuntu Celtics, who only won the one title. Those two teams played in a way that even when they lost, you were like, well, I'm still proud of them. I'm still proud of them at the end of the day. And there were so many moments before that 2018 year with the Rockets that I still think of, like Harden not playing at the end of that Clippers series, at the end of Game 6 when they had the comeback. The awful Spurs series in 2017 where Harden's getting blocked by Manu Ginobili at the buzzer.
That was the first, like, I would say, like, irredeemable sin of James Harden.
It really
was. Like, the 2015 against the Clippers, it was like, hey, he was ready to fire Kevin McHale, and so were the Rockets, as evidenced by they only brought him back for 6 games the next year before firing him. Like, that, it seemed like they're like, well, we got to bring back Kevin McHale. We made the Western Conference Finals. But yeah, the resume on Harden, especially once you get to 2018, and like especially 2019, that one was terrible too.
Oh boy.
All right, the Rockets will play tonight, try to get back above 500 for the first time since
James Harden.
Maybe fight some Blazers.
Since the bubble.
Can Steven Adams fight anybody right now off the bench?
They weren't 500 at some point this year.
They were over 500 for a good stretch.
Yeah, they were. They were
like 13-19.
Yeah, so they were 13-19 at one point. So it's been a while.
Okay. I was thinking finish a year.
Yeah, first time above 500 since 2020 in March.
Can't lose this game.
This team
stinks. You got to win this one.
Even without Jabari, the Rockets are heavy favorites to win tonight's game. But we got to talk about our beloved Cougs, because what a roller coaster that was last night. We'll talk about that next year on Glatt and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're back with Glatt and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
So the Cougs became the first team since like 1984, I think is what it said on TV last night, to win a game in the tournament in which 4 players fouled out from their starting lineup. That game was a roller coaster. First of all, we got a text about this earlier. As much as I love college basketball, and I do love March Madness, it took like 35 minutes to play the final 4 minutes.
Yeah.
It's not a great visual watch, I would say.
Well, yeah, no one can shoot.
For so many reasons.
But everyone thinks they can shoot on top of that. And as you just mentioned, at the end of a game, teams are going to foul so that they can get you to try to win a game with free throws. And guess what? When lots of guys start fouling out, the free throws are going to stop falling as well.
Yeah, it gets to a point where they show the little graphic of the guy's like free throw percentage for the year, what he shot today. And it gets to a point where if you see a guy who shoots like 74%, you're like, oh, he's one of the better free throw shooters on the team. Like, it feels like everyone starts 3 guys that shoot like 60% or under from the free throw line. It's crazy.
Spiro, is that the guy's name?
Spiro Diaz. Yes.
At one point, one of the Cougs players got to the line. He said he has no like substantial stats to even tell you what his free throw percentage is in that game. The ending of the game, just to go into overtime.
They also had a couple of replays, too, on top of that added to the amount of time.
A lot of toes on the line. For A&M.
But that three that A&M hit was...
Yeah, that guy...
I'll be honest.
Onions.
He just chucked it.
I'm mad about the way that inbound pass was so easy. Someone fell asleep. I'm not 100% sure who was supposed to be there. But, I mean, a guy from underneath the basket is bounce passing it outside the 3-point line, basically straight through the key. And how does that happen for a team that is as good defensively as Houston? If they had lost that way, my God, this would be such a different mood this morning. I got to say, look, the fouls impacted the game in a way where I'm not sure the Cougs had that much control over it, but I'm a little frustrated with the way that that game went. They had it in the bag. They were up. At one point, I think Sharp hit a three, and I said, oh, this game's done. It felt done.
I think they're up like 12 with 4 minutes left. Something like that, or eight with 3 minutes left.
I almost tweeted out my version of a victory cigar, which is blouses, bro, and with a gif from the Chappelle Show, True Hollywood Stories with Charlie Murphy, showing Dave Chappelle dressed up as Prince hanging on a rim. Game, blouses. And then all of a sudden, it just collapsed. And as someone who, yes, is the most important Cougs fan in the city, Jeremy's a paid actor. I also hold them to a standard. I know Jeremy will get mad at this a little bit later, but I'm happy they won. I'm relieved they won, but I'm disappointed in the win. And I know that they were emotional afterwards and You almost let that one get away from you.
Well, at some point, you know, it's if they were, no offense to the Cougs, if they were a professional basketball team, we would be talking about them the way we talk about the Rockets. The way that like that they get so far in the tournament, that they're always one of the best teams in the country, and that they fall short. And the expectation for this team, like they had the second best betting odds to win the championship this year. And to go toe-to-toe that way with the Aggies, who have played much better basketball. I mean, now this
people
is
were
team.
Saying that they would be a tough matchup.
Yeah, now this is a team that, like, if you look at Joe Lenardi's brackets, they were on the outside looking in the tournament until they got to the SEC tournament, won a couple games. They played really well. And it's not the worst loss in the world if it would have happened, because they're playing well, but at the same time, you are the second best team in the country at worst, and you should have taken care of business last night when you had the opportunity to.
They missed the Aggies 15 free throws, and on top of that, before they hit a couple of threes at the end, I mean, they were shooting pathetically from outside in that game, and you should have had a bigger lead on. And look, the Cougs offense, we know that from time to time it's sporadic. But last night, until Jamal Shedd had a couple of moments on his own, it really felt like it was just Emmanuel Sharp with the occasional LJ Crier shot. And when Sharp fouled out, you were like, oh God, what's going to happen here?
And then when Sharp and Crier fouled out, you're like, oh my God, Jamal Shedd, save us, please.
Please.
Yeah.
Right.
And the Cougs plays point too, that like that three that the Aggies made should never have happened. That was one of the worst jump ball calls I've ever seen in my life. I saw Andrew tweeting about it last night, a bunch of, you know, Houston Cougs. They were not happy.
It wasn't a good call.
It was an absurd call.
Yeah, but it was really awful.
But I'll also say, like, they kind of allowed that game to get to that point.
They did.
It's one of those things where it's almost like the fates of college basketball. They want the crazy stuff to happen.
They wouldn't be the first team in the world to, like, have a bad jump ball call lead to them getting a buzzer beater hit on them. They're up 12 with 2 minutes left.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought it was two.
I was giving them.
They won.
That doesn't even seem possible. 12 with 2 minutes
left. Especially in college basketball.
Yeah.
They won, and I'm happy. But, I mean, let's, you know.
Tighten it up.
We have high expectations. They're the number two overall team in the country, even with the injuries that they've gone through this year. And that was a victory that was way closer than it needed to be.
Now, Jamal Shedd. Boy, I love this kid. He's awesome. That jump stop and the little layup he threw up in there, I guess I can't remember if that was regulation or overtime. I think it was an overtime. Yeah, that was a great play.
Tip dunk?
Yeah.
Not 1 second off the court until he fouled out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. Like, you don't see that. You might see it more in college sports, in college basketball, than you would see in the pros.
Yeah.
But like, unless it's typically like LeBron in the NBA Finals, players come off the court. And he was just out there all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nuts, especially in overtime, and he didn't look like he really was slowing. Again, like we're saying, everyone else on the Cougs fouled out, so it was more and more of a burden on Shedd, and he was able to carry it.
When he's at the free throw line before he fouls out, and they're talking about how he hasn't come out of the game yet, he looks like he hadn't been sweating.
Yeah,
so calm, so like nowhere near out of breath. He was very, very, very impressive.
I hope the Rockets draft him.
In the second round?
Number 8 overall. Whatever the Nets pick is. Just draft him.
All right, you heard it here first. Jamal Shedd.
Hey, he fits the identity.
He does. He does.
But he needs to fight someone.
Yeah, he's got to fight someone. Hey, Duke's coming up.
They play Duke. Good opportunity. Faces.
Yeah, good opportunity to fight someone. Duke. Faces. But yeah, it was a very good fun win. 7-1-0-3. Do you think Houston can beat UConn playing like that?
No. Flat no.
No, they can't beat a lot of teams playing like that. But
you see, Dan Hurley's getting mad at them when they're up 30. I mean, even Kelvin Sampson, that's something he would do too. But I'm sorry, UConn is the villain team in every movie ever. Yeah. That's an unstoppable juggernaut. I don't see anyone beating them.
The Aggies missing 15 free throws is just that. I mean, I get it. I get it. They shot, I think, 48 of them. So if you miss, that's still not a horrible percentage, but that's still bad. Especially a game that goes to overtime. You want those 15 free points.
Who has? I'm looking at Duke's roster right now just to get us ready.
Kyle Filipowski, most punchable face.
Okay, I was about to say, who has the most hateable Duke sounding name?
Oh,
and I was just going to go name. Yeah. Jaden Shutt.
Okay, strong start.
Well, that's a pretty good one. How about Kyle Filipowski already out there? Neil Begovic.
I would take the first guy over. I would take Jaden over. Neil.
Okay. How about giant white man TJ Power?
Oh, why'd you have to say he's a white man?
Well, because I mean that's the trick with Power. The Duke guys. You just hate the white Duke players. Because it's fun.
I like the white ones come with a little warning of like, warning, this man is white.
He's white and goes to Duke. Has he thrown change at the homeless today? I don't know. Has his maid changed his chamber pot today? I don't know.
I'm gonna say Jaden Shutt is the most punchable name on Duke. Filipowski's the player because we all know what we went through this year with him. Yeah. The court storming nonsense that we had to deal with from Jay Billis talking about how all these guys, everyone needs to be arrested.
Yeah, they amputate Filipowski's leg.
Yeah. The fact that he's playing on Friday against the Cougs.
Heartwarming.
It's a heartwarming story. Really underdog.
Also, I'm not sure if he makes it out of the first half. if 140-pound Wake Forest kid can knock him over. I'm not sure what he's got for Kelvin Sampson's squad.
2575. Can we talk about how Jack Easterby's prayers are clearly a jinx? Sorry, Aggies. Yeah, they were. They clearly were.
I'm just very thankful that the Aggies now have a way to remove him from their operation, because as soon as that became public, the amount of flaming that they got. It's probably for the best that Texas A&M is so close to Houston. So of all the places that would have people who would know, no, you don't want that guy around your program. There's enough Aggies who follow the Texans who are like, okay, wait a second. We can't do this.
Again, that was the one game where every member of the fan base is like, wait, that guy? every single one of them.
It's rare that you have the upper hand having Ted Cruz on your bandwagon, and the Cougs had the upper hand last night.
They absolutely did.
Again, though, maybe Jack Easterby's prayers, he could only do so much. He could only get him to the line 48 times.
He can't make all the shots.
They can't all go in. Yeah. There's a bunch of other stuff from March Madness that we have not gotten to. Mainly, we've got a heel turn happening in the women's game. And then maybe the ultimate villain gave a gnarly PR statement as well. We'll discuss that next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Before we do that, I want to tell you guys about O Athletic. You can check them out at oathletic.com or 767 North Shepherd. O Athletic is a new state-of-the-art gym. It's not super new, but you guys got to check it out because they have everything you need. They have weightlifting classes. They have agility classes. All throughout the week, over 100 classes that you can attend. Plus, they have personal training. My guy Cam, he's been working with me. We set up our session for next week to get my progress on my weight loss to make sure that my BMI is going down and getting me into shape, because that's what we're doing this for, is for me to get healthy in 2024. So if you're like me and you're a little late into the game, into the action, you know, it's almost April and you haven't started your weight loss journey, or you want to add some muscle or just lean out, make sure you check out oathletic.com or go there, 767 North Shepherd, and tell them Joe George sent you by.
Yeah.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and
92.5. Bunch of other good games this weekend. Creighton, Oregon was awesome.
That one was at least good.
That game was very fun. It's been an enjoyable tournament, I think, so far.
I just think it's been a reminder that college basketball is a rough watch until the last 4 minutes. And the best part about the first couple of weekends is that you can stack all those games on top of one another. Mm-hmm. So you see the last 4 minutes over and over and over and over and over again without having to have watched the first 16 minutes.
Yeah.
Makes me sound like a great sports fan, huh?
Over the weekend, the only upset there was Clemson over Baylor. I believe every other
pour one out.
Every other game this weekend, the favorite, the higher seeded line won the game.
All the ones, all the twos, and the only two threes that are out are Baylor and Kentucky.
Yeah, and Kentucky lost in the first round, so not exactly a riveting weekend for ups. I mean, Colorado had Marquette on the ropes. The Oakland was fun.
Yeah, to me it was just the lack of, or not even the lack of. There's just certain spots, especially the Saturday Sunday games, where the Duke James Madison game, it was like after 5 minutes, you're like, okay, this one's over.
That's how a lot of them felt.
Yale, San Diego State, all right, this one's over. Like, there's just so many games where it's just the ball goes up, okay, this one's over.
Yeah,
and you would just like some more, you know, like you mentioned, Colorado Marquette, Oregon Creighton was a great one.
No,
Cougs Aggies was a good one.
Gonzaga. They smashed Kansas.
Yeah, that was nice.
In the second half. It was 44-43.
Catholic pride.
And then Gonzaga scored 46 points in the second half, shut Kansas down completely in the second half.
I love my people on the east side of Washington. They're a very intense group of people. And hell yeah, go Zags, baby.
Go Zags.
They had a fun three flights it takes to get back to Spokane from wherever they played that game.
Same thing with Wazoo, because Washington State's not that far away. I think it's about an hour and a half away from Gonzaga. I was bummed to see the Cougs lose, our beloved Cougs, the other ones. There's two Cougs. They played Iowa State. Iowa State's mean.
Iowa State looks...
Yeah, they look. I mean, Iowa State looks exactly like the team that smoked... Houston, yeah, in the Big 12 final.
Talk about two teams that won in blowouts: Illinois and Iowa State. That one should be a good one.
Yeah, that should be a good game. Hopefully, we need some more competitive games.
And that's the upside of all the ones and twos and half the threes making it, is that you are in theory going to get best on best here in the Sweet 16, Elite Eight.
Better second weekend.
Hopefully, much more. I had an okay weekend betting wise. I did okay.
That's good.
My
bracket would have been perfect if I filled it out.
Yeah?
I found that out today. Yeah, I looked down at my handwritten bracket, and I was like, wow, I got them all right.
Yeah.
Good for me.
You've always been a big Clemson guy.
Yeah. Well, listen, between Clemson and Baylor, I mean, you hate both schools by default.
Sean did watch me sweat out two bets this weekend.
Yeah?
So the first one was Friday night.
This is at the O'Bears, right?
At LeBears, yeah. So Friday night, what was it?
You made it Irish?
The James Madison game was that? I can't remember what game it was.
James Madison, Friday, Wisconsin.
Oh yeah, I live bet the under 131.5. I missed it by a point and a half. Ended at 133.
It was dead for.
It was so dead.
Basically, from when I sat down,
and then all of a sudden it was like we were in it.
Yeah,
and I was feeling
some missed free throws. You're back alive, or no, made free throws. It was an under. Missed free throws. You're back alive.
And then Saturday, I had the over in the Arizona Dayton game. Had no business even coming close to that one. But Dayton started fouling Arizona with like 2 minutes left to go in the game, and they were down 10. So they were just giving them points.
It was ridiculous.
And I was like, honestly, all of a sudden I was like, oh, wait a minute. I missed it by 2 points.
A little shady by the Dayton coach of why you're fouling.
Yeah, I was like, maybe he's got the over in this one.
My favorite part of listening to people talk about their gambling exploits is when they like try to rationalize their disease.
I came up.
You would have covered it, you know.
I won a lot of money this weekend.
There's something up there. But yeah, but you wanted more, you greedy bastard.
Well, I actually lost a decent amount, and then I won a lot of it back on Saturday.
Oh, so you lost it and then won it back.
I won a lot of money playing blackjack on Saturday night.
You're
like
card counter?
No, I got the most.
Why'd you do it?
Lovely cards for about 10 hands straight, where I was just getting 18, 19s, 20s, and blackjacks.
Sounds fishy.
Pretty consistently.
Yeah.
It was pretty wonderful. Hmm. Check out LaBerge. It's a good time.
Check that dealer.
So, Kim Mulkey happened this weekend again.
Kim.
So she, right before LSU's game on, or just meeting with the media on Saturday.
Because she would never make it about herself.
Just goes scorched earth on the Washington Post. out of nowhere, it seems. Like, no one knows what's going on. All of a sudden, she just starts screaming, basically, at this reporter who's dropping a supposed hit piece in the next week. Is that what she said? I don't even know when she said they're going to drop it, but... It was very bizarre, and all I heard when listening to it was, she's guilty.
That's what you heard from it?
Yeah.
Why? Haven't even seen it come out yet.
Yeah, but I whenever someone is going to attack, be on the attack that aggressively, and try to spin the media, try to spin it as like as a hit piece, and only have, she said they only had 2 days to comment on it, right? Well, the reality is this story's been being written for 2 years, mm-hmm. and they've been trying to get her to comment on it for 2 years. They're finally just going to go to print with it and said, hey, you have 48 hours to respond, and she still won't respond to it. So it just how aggressive she was, it screams like she's hiding something.
Well, what do you think she would be hiding? Because we'll the only see. Thing that I can think of that would actually resonate with enough people to click on the article and read the article would be stuff relating to Brittany Griner.
Yeah, or just mistreatment of players in general.
I mean, it could be that. It also could be mistreatment of players could be Brittany Griner didn't hear from Kim Mulkey when she was in a jail in Russia because sure. of something that she did, which was ill-advised no matter yes. how you feel about Russia's laws. They are Russia's laws. I look at it from this perspective. Kim Mulkey does seem very unlikable. I also look at it at this from this perspective, though. In 2023, 2024, there are so many people who do not like the media. So if you get ahead of it like this, there's going to be people who side with you immediately, regardless of whether or not the story that comes out ends up being true. And there's going to be a lot of skepticism, mm-hmm. eyebrow raising towards entities like the New York Times and the Washington Post and others who do feel a little bit more part of the political ideology game than they've been in years past.
Sure.
I am curious about the contents of the story, but this might be the way to go about it now, to go Cobra Kai, strike first.
And we've seen it work for Dave Portnoy. When the New York Post
exactly.
When the New York Post is, or the New York Times has done stories on him and you know, he, instead of waiting to, you know, for the article to come out, it's okay. They've given me 48 hours to respond. I can't adequately respond to this. Now, his seemed like he actually had 48 hours to respond, and he went on the offensive and told stories and shared screenshots and let it be known. Frankly, it is probably the best way to handle it. If you disagree with a story that's being written about it, you tell your story first. But she also didn't tell her story.
She
That's
didn't
what
tell
I found
the story.
Out.
I agree with you there. If she had actually told the story, that would have made me a little happier, at least as far as what we're talking about right now. But I'm not saying this is the right way to go about it from a moral perspective. All I'm saying is it's probably the right way to go about it from a, if you want to fight a story that's put up about you and you know that it's coming, you may as well get them antsy before it's posted. Mm-hmm. Because these days, a lot of people just aren't going to believe the things that they read.
No, that's very true.
I'm not even trying to take a side here, but I kind of understand the strategy, and I mean, it's worked for certain former presidents to go about it this way too. So may as well. Like, what's the worst that's going to happen here?
Yeah, you're basically just giving there's just going to be people that are just going to be on Kim Mulkey's side no matter what.
Exactly.
There's going to be people that are against Kim Mulkey no matter what.
Also, exactly.
You're giving the people, the Kim Mulkey defenders, you're basically just, hey, here's what my defense will be. You're just giving them a head start on, like, getting the, well, you know, you never, they didn't give her enough time to respond, da-da-da-da-da. It's like, yeah, it's not really a defense, though. You're just kind of throwing stuff out there. And I do find it interesting, like, it's before it even drops. And there is a little bit of, like, yes, maybe going on the offensive helps, but it's also, like, we would not be talking about Kim Mulkey right now if she didn't
not
go on the tirade.
No.
Like, so it's a little bit of, like, well, now my ears are going to be perked up for a Washington Post story about Kim Mulkey that's coming up that before probably wouldn't care about unless it was, like, some super scandalous stuff.
Honestly, I probably wouldn't have read it or ever talked about it.
Yeah.
If she didn't mention this first.
Because, like, what you're mentioning, like, what could possibly be about? The only way, if she doesn't basically give us a pre-rebuttal, is the only reason that we would talk about it is if, yeah, there's something either super explosive that's, like, going to get her fired, mm-hmm. or it's, like, something crazy about Brittany Griner. But if it's just like, yeah, you know, she was kind of mean to some Baylor girls back in 2015 that, you
know, coached them hard.
That we don't know. Yeah, just kind of, you know, your run-of-the-mill aggressive college coach stuff story mm-hmm. that comes out where they maybe cross a line, but it's not like criminal in any mm-hmm. way. We probably don't talk about it. Like, but now there is a spotlight on it.
Mm-hmm. And then we had Caitlin Clark this weekend.
Oh, man.
Heel turn. So
I like this. I like both these stories, actually.
I do too. So Caitlin Clark's, I don't even know where to begin.
She's a crazy person.
She threw the ball off her own head.
Her dad like was telling her to shut up.
Yeah, she was complaining so much her dad told her to shut up, and they caught it on camera.
She got in the ref's face.
Yeah.
After a call. Yeah, the dad saying shut up
is
to her.
It's so funny.
While she was yelling back at her dad from the court. You got to feel, no matter who you are, Caitlin Clark is like the biggest star in women's sports right now on today, March 25th, 2024. That's got to make you feel so small. Like you're out there and your dad's like, shut up.
Because that's, you did it right.
The thing is, though, he's been telling her to shut up. He's been coaching her like that for however old she is, 20 years. Like, I think she's used to I don't know what Mr. Clark's name is, but I'm sure she's used to Mr. Clark's coaching style of telling her to shut up. All the gyms that she's played in that are, you know, probably smaller and less filled than the Iowa City gym for the NCAA tournament. She's definitely heard her dad chirp a little bit more than just a shut up.
He seems so annoyed.
I love it too. He seems like such a hard ass.
Yeah, and he's just like, shut up. He's like, for the love of God, stop complaining.
Yeah, the throwing the ball on her head.
I like that though. That was.
I know. No,
that's a new one.
That's a good one.
I like that she's just like a psycho. Like
I respect that.
Now we got a little something, but because before,
could she be a Houston Rocket? With that kind of mentality?
Well,
she ain't no soft boy.
Normally we hit the other team. We don't.
Hashtag strong
woman.
Doesn't
hit himself.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. You do want him to hit the other team. Yeah, throw that at another player. And I'll be like, oh,
throw some bows. I don't know who you're playing in the second round. Throw some bows, please.
Yeah, just interesting weekend for Caitlin Clark. She all of a sudden became the villain on Twitter a little bit.
Yeah, she
did. That's kind of what you need, though.
Yes.
That's what you need.
When has there ever been a villain that you can, like, remember in women's college basketball?
Yeah.
Because it's always positive. Like, we always love – everyone loved Diana Taurasi.
They tried to make Angel Reese that.
Yeah,
I was going to
say, whichever side you fall on last year's national championship, it could either be Iowa or LSU.
I guess, yeah.
I guess. But, I mean, that's still, 12 months ago where it's not – it hasn't – we don't have a long, illustrious history of, like, heels in women's basketball.
Yeah, there's not enough J.J. Redick's in women's basketball.
And that's true.
That's what we need from Caitlin Clark.
True qualities when we can hate the stars of women's basketball. It has nothing to do with, like, them being women. It's just like, hey, you're being a little extra right now.
Is Caitlin Clark the Christian Laettner of college basketball, women's college basketball now?
Ooh.
I wouldn't go that far.
She's going to be on the Olympic team.
I do wish, instead of flopping against that Ohio State fan, I wish that she just cold cocked that person.
Like, totally
just,
agree.
Just took him out.
The flop.
If she had taken him out, I would have liked it. I would actually like her more. I'd be like, yeah, I would have done that if I was 19 and I just lost a game to a team that sucks.
That is the thing with her and Kyle Filipowski, is like the going down, like trying to get sympathy. That's not the way into America's heart.
Yeah,
I hate to break it to you.
Yeah, fight back.
The way to is like start knocking dudes over.
All right, three more days until baseball is officially back. Our Astros opening day countdown is next here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.